An engaged Ohio electorate gave strong approval to two statewide issues in the November election. Voters easily passed issue one that enshrines abortion and other reproductive health protections in the state constitution, and issue two, a statute that legalizes recreational marijuana for those 21 and older. The passage of both issues comes despite strong opposition to both measures, including from Republican lawmakers who say the battle over abortion rights is far from finished. Welcome to the Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. What does the outcome of this election mean heading into the 2024 presidential election? And what does the passage of Ohio's abortion protections mean for other red states? We'll talk to our panel of experts about the results with a focus on issue one. You can call in or email in with your questions or comments. First, the latest national and local news. It's the Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for joining us. Ohio voters have become the latest to protect abortion rights at the state level. Voters easily passed issue one on election day, meaning that abortion and other reproductive health protections will be enshrined in the state constitution. Despite the strong opposition to issue one, supporters easily passed the amendment, and the race was called less than 2 hours after polls closed. Last year, the United States Supreme Court overturned the nearly 50-year landmark precedent of Roe v. Wade. The decision meant that states would decide whether abortion would remain legal and available. Ohio immediately moved to enact its 6-week no-exception abortion ban, known also as the Heartbeat Bill. That law remains on hold due to an ongoing legal challenge. A large coalition of groups came together to put the amendment proposal before voters as issue one. And this hour, we're going to spend some time going over the results of the two statewide issues and some local races and ballot issues with our panel of political experts. We welcome, of course, your input into the conversation. But first, let's talk about issue one, passing by one of the groups that advocated for this amendment. Joining me by phone this morning is Kelly Copeland, Executive Director of Pro-Choice Ohio. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us and talking to us about issue one.
I am delighted to be here, Jenny. Thank you so much.
We're glad to have you. And if any of you out there in listener world would love to join the conversation or have a question or thought, want to engage with Kelly, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or you can tweet us. We are at Sound of Ideas. So, Kelly, let's talk about your overall reaction to the outcome on issue one, as we said, called within 2 hours of polls closing in Ohio.
I mean, I am elated. I was so worried all of this time because there were so many unprecedented dirty tricks, right, from our opponents, from the August special election to misinformation, so many things. But in the end, Ohio voters, they saw through it all. And I'm so deeply grateful to them for seeing through all of the deception and for voting their values, for saying that I want to make my own reproductive health care decisions about abortion, about contraception, so many of those things. I don't want the government making that decision. And that's really the fundamental issue. And Ohioans turned out strong. And one other thing I did want to say, I've been hearing people say that we won easily. We did not win easily. We won decisively, but there was nearly a million people who took action on this campaign, from signing petitions to making donations to volunteering. It was a massive coalition of people and organizations and nearly a million people. This was hard fought.
You know, I've got to say, there seemed to be a ubiquitous nature to the amount of vote yes on issue one signs that I saw through every part of Cuyahoga County, at least where I live. So I think that's kind of indicative of what you're talking about. There was a lot of work done that kind of made the outcome look easy just on election day alone.
Right. And, you know, keep in mind, you know, we've been fighting this 6-week abortion ban for 12 years. Last night was the culmination of 12 years of work to stop that ban, to make sure that people can access care. And, you know, when the 6-week ban went into effect temporarily last year, It was devastating. People had to delay cancer treatments. People who needed abortions had to flee the state. And like Cleveland is a medical destination internationally. It was shocking to patients to talk to their doctors and not be able to get the care they need and to have to flee to Pennsylvania or Michigan or somewhere else. And because of what voters did last night and what all of these volunteers have done for the last 12 years, that's not going to happen again, not in Ohio.
Kelly, state leaders already saying they'll seek pass to try and repeal or replace this measure. Ohio Republican House Speaker Jason Stevens said this in a statement yesterday following the results. The legislature has multiple paths that we will explore to continue to protect innocent life. This is not the end of the conversation. And the Center for Christian Virtue President Aaron Baer said this last night.
We persevered for 50 years to overturn Roe v. Wade. Ours is a movement that has always endured and always will. Tomorrow, the work starts again.
Referring to today, what are your thoughts on efforts to reverse or alter this decision from state leaders?
They've had 50 years to convince people to support their agenda to ban abortion, and they have failed. They need to accept that this is not what Ohioans or what Americans want. They need to respect the outcome of this election. And frankly, if they want to proceed and commit political suicide, we're happy to help them do it.
Email from Jason coming into the show. He says, I'm a pro-lifer and I voted for issue one. The way we end abortion is to remove the need, not make it illegal. Not surprising that the state GOP is already trying to subvert the will of the people. The current GOP seems to only value elections that go their way. So, you know, an interesting nuanced position that Jason has. And I wonder, Kelly, if you think that reflects the variance in the voting demographic that actually pushed issue one through. How were different parts of Ohio and different demographics galvanized in order to make issue one, at least the abortion rights enshrined as they are today?
Well, that comment certainly illustrates what we know. People across the political spectrum believe that they should have the right to make their own personal decisions about pregnancy and abortion, not the government. And to his point, you know, pro-choice organizations, reproductive justice organizations have been fighting for decades for quality, affordable child care, for access to contraception, for so many of the things. I mean, we don't even have in Ohio a mandatory minimum unpaid parental leave policy in this state. When I hear these politicians like Matt Huffman and others, you know, talk about how they don't want to listen to the will of the people, how about taking that energy and put that towards supporting families, supporting people who want to have children, and really staying the hell out of it when it comes to abortion and those other issues? That's not where they belong.
You know, Kelly, this vote's being watched nationally as a number of states.
Yes, I noticed.
NPR this morning driving into work all over the perspectives from other states and just from national observers really remarking on Ohio as a solidly red state, serving as an example that voters can through their will enact something that is seemingly a little more progressive than what Ohio in recent days historically has been pushing through. So I'm curious, are abortion rights measures before voters next year from other states, do you think those groups are going to be in contact and say, how did you make this happen? How did you do this?
Absolutely. And, you know, we were in contact with folks in Kansas and Kentucky and Michigan. And, you know, we will support our colleagues in other states in their quest for reproductive freedom. But I would go back and take a little exception to the idea that Ohio is a deeply red state. You know, because of the support that we've had and over 15,000 donors, we have the resources to have the conversation that's necessary with voters, to cut through all of the gerrymandering and the dirty tricks. You know, that's been the problem in Ohio. And one of the next things that we need to do to make sure that this victory is permanent is that we need to end gerrymandering so that people aren't actually disenfranchised, so that they can elect people who represent their views and their community. This gang of anti-choice politicians in Columbus do not represent the views of Ohioans, and that was abundantly clear tonight. And I think that we'll see a lot more investment in Ohio because of what happened here tonight, or last night. Gosh, you know, I'm still on last night.
You know, we had a thought from listener Todd, who asks, what other protections other than this being a constitutional amendment are there so voters don't have to go through this again? Kelly, what would you say?
I mean, I think that the legislature is certainly a threat, and, you know, voters need to keep an eye on that. But the one thing that I would say to him and to anyone else who is worried, this was a massive coalition that's not going anywhere. And we're going to make sure that whether through legal action or political action, that the will of the people, that their constitutional rights to abortion, to fertility treatments, to contraception, to continuing their pregnancies, all of that will remain protected. Because that is a basic human right. And Ohioans have said that that's what they want, and that will be respected.
Kelly Copeland of Pro-Choice Ohio, enjoy your victory this morning, and hope you get some rest. My thanks to you for joining us on The Sound of Ideas.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thank you again to all the voters who voted yes. I love all of you for doing that. We have a safer state because of you.
Time now for a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss what the passage of Issue 1 and Issue 2 means, especially through the lens of the upcoming 2024 presidential election. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for being with us this hour. Ohio voters sent a strong message in this general election, easily passing both state issue 1 to enshrine abortion protections in the state constitution, and issue 2, a statute legalizing recreational marijuana for those 21 and older. Both of the state issues passed by sizable margins despite strong opposition, including from Republican lawmakers, to both measures. And the margins of victory were remarkably similar for both issues. In unofficial results from the Secretary of State's office, both issues passed with roughly 57% of the vote. Again, that was 57% of the vote. Ohio was the only state to directly decide on abortion rights this election, and the outcome was being watched closely nationwide, especially in those other red states where similar issues are expected to be placed before voters in 2024. We are going to talk in this segment about the outcome of the election and what those results mean for 2024 as we head into a presidential election year with our panel of experts. In studio, we have Dr. Tom Sutton, professor of political science at Baldwin Wallace University. Tom, welcome to you.
Good morning, Jenny.
And we have Matt Cox, the founder and president of Capital Partners, a government advocacy and media relations firm. Matt, so glad you could join us this morning.
Thanks, Jenny. Happy to be here.
By phone, we have Columbus State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Karen, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, great to be here this morning.
How late were you up?
I think I went to bed about 3:30.
And your wake-up time?
My son had to go to school, so 6:30.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Karen, we appreciate you. Okay,
it's election night.
Yeah, this is when we rally, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have questions or comments, or you want to talk about the election with our panel of experts, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. Email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We are at Sound of Ideas. So, generally, I want to ask your reaction to last night's results. Matt, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, thanks. So I think the fact that it was nearly identical to the results in August, with a higher turnout of 57% being against the issue 1 in August and 57% being for, I was surprised at the difference between issue 1 and issue 2 early, and they kind of caught up to each other. I would have thought that overall issue 1 might have gotten less than 57%, but it clearly is a signal to our elected leaders that you know, this is an issue that resonates with a lot of people. I have a 10 and a 16-year-old daughter, and they were both very aware of this without my even mentioning it. And they both passed through the living area where we were watching results, and when they saw that issue one had passed, they kind of exclaimed happiness towards that result.
That's interesting.
And so, you know, this is clearly an issue that impacts a lot of people. I think not allowing for a rape exception to the abortion issue was huge for a lot of voters. And I certainly hope that when we all kind of get past the initial emotions of this, that we listen to the voters and figure out how to make this work for everyone across the state.
And Tom, do you share in that sentiment?
Yes, absolutely. I'm pleased to see that it actually matched up with our poll that we did a few weeks ago that showed the 58% and 57% in the poll.
Wow.
And so I'm tempted to just retire now on polling and just call it a day because we got right that time.
You win some sort of prize.
Yeah, I got a prize on that one. But what first the voter turnout, so much higher for an off-year election than we would expect, but certainly not surprising given these two issues. I also did a little county-by-county look this morning and found it was interesting. 40 counties voted yes for issue two, but only 25 voted yes for issue one. But the difference was margins. The margins in the urban counties for issue one were much larger. They were in the 70s, whereas those margins were in the 60s in those same counties for issue two. The other interesting thing was that for issue one, there were 30 counties that voted against it by 60% or more, of which, and then another 7 by 70% or more. Whereas if you look at issue two, only 5 counties voted in favor, 60% plus, and against 7 counties. So the margins really made a big difference, but the end result wound up with a 0.4% difference between the two issues in total.
So saying the, you know, more densely populated urban areas, those voters were energized
Absolutely.
In the direction of pushing issue one through.
Absolutely. And a lot of rural counties that voted in favor of issue two, which I just found really interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting. Yeah.
I think the pro-issue two campaign ran the best non-campaign in Ohio's history.
Yes.
They just kind of sat around and were like, okay, we're just over here in the corner.
Right.
Let's get past this.
Practicing.
And there were very few ads, very few, you know, not much of a campaign at all.
Yeah, they spent $1 million in the favor campaign, about $300,000 against, whereas for issue one, it was somewhere in the $30 million range for those that were in favor.
So really kind of riding on the heels or on the back of issue one. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Karen, as a journalist, I mean, what was your kind of perception of how things shook out last night?
Well, I did ask that question of the issue two folks. How did they win when they really didn't do a whole lot of campaigning? And they did have a couple of ads. They did have some signs. But yeah, it was a really low-key ad campaign. They credit it to people understood what legalizing recreational marijuana means. The question now is, of course, what does the legislature want to do with that? Because it is a law, and state lawmakers who are opposed to the legalization of recreational marijuana could make some changes. They've already said they're going to. Issue one, of course, got the most attention, the most money, certainly sucked up all the oxygen in the room, it felt like, and for good reason, because Ohio became the 7th state to affirm abortion rights, and a conservative state affirming abortion rights. And I know Kelly Copeland was saying that she doesn't necessarily think that Ohio is a deeply red state. Well, it is a red state when you look at the maps over the last decade. So I think it's really interesting to see the results here. I'm going to be tweeting out sharing on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it, a whole bunch of data about this. But there's a lot of really interesting things about this. And one of the first ones is that Ohio and Michigan were almost the same when it came to this abortion rights amendment and their percentage of passage, because Michigan passed it last year, and yet Ohio is a much more Republican state than Michigan is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting too. I want to go ahead and take a call from listener John. He's calling in from Kent. John, thanks for calling into the Sound of Ideas. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning to you and the panel. I'm a old 69-year-old white-haired man who's a Democrat, who feels that last night's results begin to confirm to the old white female and male majorities in government, largely Republican in our state, that they are a dying breed politically, and they're trying mightily with their fingertips to hang on to power. They may, in the short term, throw hatchets into and monkey wrenches into this these results from last night. But as your previous guest said, they're going to be increasingly doing it at their own peril. And quite frankly, I hope they do it between now and next November, because they're only accelerating their political extinction. They're trying to make Ohio a wasteland for liberty, and it's not going to work.
John, point strongly made, and kind of goes in line with an email that we got from another listener asking our panel, is this a referendum on the Ohio GOP? So John says it a little more pointedly, and I'd love to ask you all what you think about last night kind of being a referendum on the GOP and attempts to kind of keep that kind of more conservative control over the state. Matt?
Yeah, I think I agree. I actually think that this proves that Ohio is a purple state.
Hmm.
I mean, how do you have this result happen? This is a higher percentage of the vote than Donald Trump got as president either time. And it shows that if young people are engaged, then different things can happen than what has been happening over the last decade. I think that Ohio legislators are hopefully going to see this and, you know, maybe be a bit more moderate in this approach. This is clearly an issue that touches the nerve with a lot of people, and it proves that Ohio is not as red as people think. And I hope that, you know, our leaders act accordingly.
Can I add one thing in there?
Please
really
do.
Quick? Yeah, there were 18 counties that went for Donald Trump in 2020 where issue one passed. That's kind of a big deal here. Mm. So I think that really does show that there is a crossover on party lines here potentially. And certainly you could read that into that the Republican hold in those counties is weakening. I don't know that we know that yet, but it really is interesting to note that there were 18 solidly Republican counties in 2020 that actually passed issue one.
Wow, that's really interesting. We have Ifeolu Clater on the line. He's the treasurer of the Northeast Ohio Young Black Democrats. I'm curious, Ifeolu, what you think about Matt's comment that, you know, maybe we are indeed a purple state, and last night's results are indicative of that.
Oh, I would 100% say that we're a purple state. I think that we showed the nation yesterday how important it is to not give up on Ohio, or not to kind of sell out Ohio as a red state. Though I think that I don't necessarily think that the legislature will actually acknowledge that. I think that some of the people in the legislature, some of our elected officials in the state legislature, will still kind of think that they know best. Some of our state legislators, particularly the majority, kind of will try to shepherd us along as though they know best in making decisions for us that aren't actually the best for us or representative of how Ohioans feel. And I'm not sure that this issue will change it, unfortunately.
Tom, what are your thoughts?
Well, I would agree with, to some degree, with what Ifeolu said related to individual legislators, and that is also largely a result of lack of challenges due in part to the gerrymandering of these districts. But I think when you look at these margins again, particularly for issue one, some of these counties were pretty substantial in voting against issue one, but there were others that are reliably Republican counties where the margin was only 4 to 6 points in terms of a defeat, which means you had 35-40% plus of those voters who voted for issue one in those counties. Now, the real key here is that you need a strong opposition to start to make progress, and that's the other side of this coin. We need to see the Democratic Party getting really serious about how do you raise candidates? How do you campaign competitively in these rural areas and continue working on your mobilization efforts in the urban areas as well?
We've already had Republican lawmakers say that the fight has just begun in trying to repeal issue one. And yet Secretary of State Frank LaRose had this to say when he spoke to a media outlet prior to the election results about the permanence of Issue 1. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
Well, this is the problem with legislating via constitutional amendment. The Constitution is obviously the supreme law of the state, and if this constitutional amendment were to pass tonight, it would supersede whatever the legislature would do. That's what is so problematic about this.
Karen, what do you have to say to that about the permanence of Issue 1? Because it is an amendment to the state constitution and, you know, kind of thwarting attempts to repeal it in any way.
Well, it's been clear that legislative leaders, Republicans, have been opposed to Issues 1 and 2. And the Senate passed a resolution actually formally opposing Issue 1. And last night, we got a statement from Senate President Matt Huffman, who said, and this is just part of the statement, this isn't the end. It is really just the beginning of a revolving door of ballot campaigns to repeal or replace Issue 1. That was also echoed a little bit by House Speaker Jason Stevens, who didn't go that far, but said that there are other avenues that the legislature could take. And so I just don't know, though, whether voters really want to talk about abortion for essentially a third election. I mean, abortion was a big part of the special election in August, which would have raised the voter threshold to 60% to pass constitutional amendment. That was rejected. Then, of course, Issue 1 last night was approved. So I just don't know that voters are really all that interested in doing an issue related to abortion again. But what's important to remember here, I think, is that, you know, next year's a presidential year, and there's expected to be a lot of Republican turnout, say, for the March presidential primary. If lawmakers put together something by December 20th, they could put a ballot issue on the March ballot on abortion. Who knows?
Well, there's also a power issue here. I mean, you know, rural Ohioans voted for term limits 20-some years ago because they wanted to take power away from people in Columbus. The August issue would have taken power away from voters, so people voted against it. The abortion issue would take power away from women, and people voted against it. I think there's also that issue to be involved, whereas a lot of rural voters just don't want to give Columbus more power than they currently have.
And that is something that can be felt kind of across party lines,
right,
as far as government infringement and having such a strong say in what you're doing in your personal life.
One other thing that I would add, too, here is I think that not only is there potentially voter fatigue in talking about this issue for essentially the third election, but there could potentially be donor fatigue. I mean, the groups that supported Issue 1 in both of these elections and opposed Issue 1 in both August and November, they're essentially the same groups of people who have been spending their time and money and efforts to try to either pass or get the issue rejected. And so I don't know that there's a whole lot of money that some of these groups and individuals can come up with to potentially mount a third campaign. I mean, there was a lot of money spent and a lot of time and effort put in to get these two issues onto the ballot and the campaigns to support them or defeat them.
So we've talked about marijuana. Let's talk about marijuana again. Matt, what do you think this vote says to potentially the culture of Ohio, Ohio trying to sell itself as like this reemerged state that's got the Intel, chip plant going on, and, you know, medicine and tech is kind of the future of the way that we are going. Do you think that this vote and Issue 2 kind of falls in line with that we are, you know, more of this progressive state than historically seen?
In a way, I also think it falls in line with the fact that we're usually last to everything. Like, we rejected casino measures and gambling measures, then everyone else around us did it, and then we finally decided to do it. I think for some reason Ohioans hate Michiganders. Is that right? And
yes.
So they've had recreational marijuana for years, living in northern Ohio. We all know people who drive to Michigan to get legal. I guess it's illegal because you can't literally buy it there, I guess. But they bring it back, and everyone's like, well, there's nothing wrong with this. Mm-hmm. And so that was a part of that as well. But clearly, as it relates to, and it wasn't intentional, but as it relates to all these new companies that are being created in data centers, these are all younger people who are going to be coming in to fill those jobs. And it makes it just that much – yesterday made it that much more livable to be in Ohio than it was last week.
Ife Olu, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that – I definitely agree with Matt actually here, that it does make it a lot more livable to be in Ohio. But I think part of it, the last time we were on, I talked about the fact that the state legislature consistently makes decisions that would make it less likely that young people would want to move to Ohio. And clearly yesterday, the voters of Ohio made a different decision to make it more livable for younger folks to live here.
Okay, I'm curious. There are some other races that happened last night, and were there any that specifically kind of popped out at you as being worthy of our chatting about right now?
Well, the race that was personally important to me was my wife's race for school board in Lakewood.
Oh.
So I have to mention that, and also mention that out of 10 candidates, she came in first.
Wow.
Yeah.
So congratulations to your wife.
Yeah, it was great.
She clearly had a good polling operation helping her with that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was very grassroots, door-to-door, literally.
Did you have a freelance rate for her?
Yeah, free indeed.
Okay, great. So let's quickly talk about this because already we're going to have to move on to some other subjects. But what does this all say as we head into 2024? You know, I was just listening to some reports about recent polling that shows there is a greater spread between Trump and President Biden when it comes to independents in these swing states, showing former President Trump way in the lead. So what do you think the results from last night might say about Ohio voters? And, you know, we had an 8-point margin for President Trump in the last presidential election. What do you think we might see this go around?
Well, I think you know, it's a year away, so we have to be careful about that polling data. But it's consistent with what we've been seeing all along. Trump's way ahead in terms of his own nomination process. And certainly in this polling, he's caught up and now surpassed Biden in many states. I think the bottom line is if we're looking at a Trump-Biden rematch, it's really going to be a tough campaign. But I think Trump may have an edge, partly because memories fade from what he was as president, and the current impression of Biden hasn't changed much, that he's too old, not communicating well, even though he's got a lot to stand on in terms of accomplishments. But people aren't seeing that, and if they don't see it, they don't feel it, they're not going to vote for it.
Matt?
Yeah, I think Virginia is always kind of a bellwether.
Sure.
I think the Democrats took control of the legislators there. Any Republican's going to have a leg up in Ohio off the bat. But you know, it's clearly changing. My Democrat operative friends talk about how over the August and the November election last night, millions of dollars for the first time in two decades were pumped into Ohio infrastructure politically. So that's only going to benefit Sherrod Brown. I'm not sure if it benefits Joe Biden or whoever the Democrat nominee is. I still think it'll be someone else. But you know, that'll help, and it won't be such a uneven playing field.
All right. And Karen, from your view in Columbus, I mean, and your reporting, what are you going to be looking out for in as we head into the 2024 presidential election?
Well, I just, again, I'm cautious about thinking about the results of this and even adding in August to something that's going to happen a year from now, because we don't know what's going to happen a year from now. So I think it really does give both Republicans and Democrats an opportunity to look at their messaging and look at their candidates and say, okay, this is what we know about Ohio now. What can we do to win? I think also, especially for the Democratic side, they have a whole new list of data that they can pull from. 700,000 people signed those petitions to put issue one on the ballot. That's a whole lot of information about people who could potentially be brought into the Democratic Party's base. And certainly one of the other things that was interesting to me was that unaffiliated voters, voters who aren't Republican or Democrat, who turned out for this election, they really decided this election. And so that suggests that there are some people who are very interested in voting who are not necessarily Republican or Democrat. They're not part of that base. And so I think that's something to think about.
And Ife Olu, earlier in the – yeah, go ahead.
Just kind of responding to that, I've heard a lot of journalists talking about how there are electeds who will kind of have to answer for this year's elections come next year. And I'm not sure, unfortunately, I'm not sure that Ohio voters, or most voters that aren't political junkies the way that we are, really are connecting those dots. Because some of these voters, whether or not they believe in conservative values, they're still going to believe in conservative values, even if they believe in women or people having access to abortion. And so I think that's one thing that we kind of, I think that a lot of people in this conversation are kind of missing, thinking that next year is going to be magically different in some way. I'm not sure that those dots are really being connected for voters, and it's up to my party, the Democratic Party, to make sure that we are connecting those dots for folks and recognizing in the legislature and recognizing on a national level how to connect those dots so that voters see it and see how Democratic values might actually be more in line with their own values.
And that's kind of what I'm saying about how it is a whole year until the election. Right. Not only do we not know what's going to happen to Trump and that sort of thing, but yeah, people have short memories and tend to forget some things a year out.
And money is being pumped into our infrastructure, but will the DNC pump money into our infrastructure next year? I'm confident that the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee will dump money in next year for Sherrod Brown, but will the DNC pump money into Ohio for Joe Biden?
All right, I'd
and
like
that's
to bring
still a question that has to be seen.
I'd like to bring Connor Morris into the conversation. He's our education reporter here at IdeaStream, and he's been tracking school board races and school levy and bond issues and waiting patiently to get on the line. So, Connor, let's go ahead and start with the Akron Board of Education race, where there were 8 candidates vying for 3 seats. How did voters ultimately decide?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. So there's going to be some new faces on the board next year. Former state rep Barbara Sykes really got tons of votes. I mean, she got 10,000 more votes than the next highest vote getter. So she performed very, very strongly there. Of course, just folks know the Sykes name well there. City employee Summer Hall was the second highest vote getter there. And that was kind of a surprise, at least to me, because I didn't know her very well before the election. She helps run at the city the community engagement. She did a community engagement position there. And then Renee Molinar was the third highest vote getter, and she was kind of an incumbent. She was appointed to a seat that was left when the president of the Akron Board of Ed left in the spring. So some interesting results there for sure. And Molinar is an instructional coach at the University of Akron. And of course, Sykes, we already know, but she was also, of course, the first black woman to be elected to Akron City Council. So she's got a pedigree there as well.
And Connor, I know that we had a slew of candidates running for limited openings in school board races across the region. Let's talk about North Royalton, where candidates were getting support from Frank LaRose and the national PAC, the 1776 Project.
Yeah, it was an interesting race for sure. So Mike Tellup, he's a local lawyer in Morona Florian. She's a mom of 4 who sends her kids to private schools. They were getting a lot of attention from a lot of conservatives. LaRose endorsed them. Keith Faber endorsed them. And the 1776 Project is this, it's a PAC, national PAC, which boosts conservative candidates in these kind of local Board of Ed races. Usually candidates who were against the teaching of critical race theory. Again, schools say that's not taught in Ohio. It's not part of their curriculum. It's like an academic theory that racism is kind of baked into the fabric of American society. But that PAC paid for a mailer in that case, in that race. But voters actually rejected their bid. And there was a 3-person ticket, and they all won election. So it was for the 3 open seats there in North Royalton. It was Jackie Aaron, John Higgins, and Christina May. They were running a very nonpartisan race. And these board races in Ohio, these Board of Ed races, are nonpartisan. They don't have a D or R next to their names on the ballot. But we've seen in recent years that some of these races have become a little more politically polarized. And we've done some reporting on that recently. But again, the folks that won in North Royalton, yeah, they're running very much so on a very moderate kind of, you know, they're a mix of Dems and Republicans, you know, in terms of registered voters. Over in Mentor, another real quick thing if I can mention, too,
sure.
With the Board of Ed race there. Rose Iapolo, she's a State Senator Jerry Serino's daughter. She won. But also Lauren Marchaza won the other seats. There are 2 open seats there. She was running on a She was running on a campaign that was really like the folks in North Royalton, trying to end this focus on hot button cultural topics. And Rose Iapolo was kind of the opposite. She was talking about, you know, a book. She and her fellow running mate said, you know, we're not trying to ban books. We're trying to remove sexually explicit books from classrooms. And also talking a bit about bathroom usage of bathrooms by transgender students as well, too. So some other hot button issues there.
All right. So unfortunately, we've already run out of time. I just want to end real quickly with Tom, because participatory budgeting in Cleveland was something a lot of people were keeping their eye on. We were reporting on and issue 20 in Lorain, which would have meant a restructuring of the government in that county. Thoughts on how those races played out?
Well, the participatory budgeting was really close, 51 to 49 against. And so I think that was really a good sign as far as that campaign. It's a really new idea for voters to be considering. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see it on the ballot again at some point in the future. Lorain, honestly, that's one I missed in terms of the result, but it's fascinating to see that they're looking at restructuring their governance.
Yeah.
So
It
did not pass. So Cuyahoga and Summit are still the only two counties that have that form of executive county council, county government in the state of Ohio.
All righty. So that is Dr. Tom Sutton of Baldwin Wallace, Matt Cox of Capital Partners. We have on the line Ife Olukleter with the Northeast Ohio Young Black Democrats, our own Connor Morris from IdeaStream, and State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Appreciate all of you joining me on the day after Election Day to have a great conversation.
It's great to be with you, Jenny. Thanks.
Time now for another break. And when we return, we'll talk to Shamus Malik, who won the race to be the next mayor of Akron last night. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for staying with us. Akron Council member Shamus Malik officially won the Akron mayoral election last night by an overwhelming percentage of the vote over any write-in candidate. He's been seen as the likely next mayor of Akron for the past 6 months, as there was no Republican or independent challenger on the November ballot. Winning at just 32 years old, Malik will be the city's first millennial mayor, and will also be the first person of color and first Muslim to lead the city, coming at a time of racial unrest following the police shooting of a young black man, Jalen Walker, last year. Mayor-elect Malik joins us now to talk a little bit about his vision for the job ahead. Thanks so much for calling in, Mayor, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Of course. If you'd like to join the conversation, you have a question for the mayor-elect, call 866-578-0903 or 216-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We are at Sound of Ideas. So I want to congratulate you on your win last night. Were there any nerves, or were you pretty relaxing as you were running unopposed?
Yeah, it's easy not to have nerves when you are the only name on the ballot. But, you know, there's always nerves when it comes to something like this. It's a huge responsibility, huge honor. And, you know, each day it gets closer to starting on January 1st, and this was a big milestone in that regard. So they've been calling me presumptive mayor. I'm glad to no longer be presumptive and, you know, to be, officially ready to start in less than 2 months here.
So then let's talk about that. You have had 6 months to think about your agenda and your visions for the city and, kind of priorities when it comes to actions you want to take. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what you are thinking are some first courses of action for you as mayor?
You know, like you said, we've been able to spend a lot of time preparing. And so we are putting together a pretty strong team. We have job openings up right now. If you go to togetherforakron.com, you can see some of those, and we're going to be posting more in the next week or so. We are putting together like a 100-day plan. The biggest focuses, and I've talked about this for a while, are safety and education. Sure. If we don't have safety, if we don't have strong schools, we're going to continue to lose population. And so we want to change that narrative. We want people to kind of pick their head up and be proud of being from here and create some new energy. And that's going back to the basics. And so we're going to, as we go into the first 100 days, we're going to be unveiling some of those things. Some of our plans around violence intervention, around violence prevention and early childhood education, youth opportunities and extracurriculars outside of school. Those are some of the things that we're really going to prioritize.
Yeah, and you know, that seems to be something that you know, we here at IdeaStream, and I know a lot of civic leaders have been concerned about, is the youth of Akron with a rising violence that has been kind of born of the pandemic and never dissipated, and of course the tumultuous nature of schools coming out of the pandemic as well. So I'm curious. I mean, you must have been following the school board races then pretty closely. If these are the people that you're going to work side by side with in order to make the schools engaging and protective of these young kids of Akron.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we as the city of Akron do not have an appointed school board. We have an independently elected school board. And I was just texting with some of the winners this morning and just congratulating them. I actually saw most of them out yesterday as I was going from polling place to polling place. And truth be told, honestly, I was looking forward to working with whoever was elected. But the folks who won last night, Barbara Sykes, who has had a long career in public service and is very experienced, I think will bring that experience to the board. Renee Molnar, who I've gotten to know over the past few months, a new member of the board, but has been the Ward 8 liaison for my ward meetings and is incredibly bright when it comes to education policy. And then Summer Hall, who I've worked with for a number of years because she is a City of Akron employee. So I think we're going to have some great perspective to add to the board. And I think people who definitely, you know, understand what I've been talking about. I think I said to IdeaStream last night, I said to someone last night, you know, we at the city, we don't have an education department, but we are going to have a specific role and other people on our team who are focused on building those partnerships with APS, with, you know, our universities, and going from there.
You know, we talked about violence, and I mentioned that you are coming into term at a difficult time when many Akron residents have called for police reform and cultural change following the police killing of 25-year-old Jalen Walker last year. A grand jury declined to indict Akron police officers earlier this year, which led to more unrest. So how do you as mayor hope to address the tensions between residents and the city while in office and to kind of regarner trust from your Akron electorate?
Well, we have to tackle it head on. This is something that I worked on probably more than any other issue as a council member. This is something that has existed for decades, which is a deep divides in trust between our police department and our Black community, just to be frank. And so one step that we took was this police oversight board, and people may have read, we are still in the process of trying to get that up and running and functioning. And I've really committed to putting my shoulder to that work. But it's also the work of making sure that our officers have the time and space and bandwidth to be out there building relationships in the community and, you know, not have to rush from call to call to call, but can actually take their time and, you know, get to know people on foot patrols and bike patrols and other things. People really enjoy that and appreciate that. They want, most people, I can't speak for everyone, most people that I speak with want to see officers out in their neighborhoods, want to have those relationships, want to have, you know, mutual perspectives of dignity and respect. So that's what we're going to be focused on. And also on, you know, a safety forces hiring program. We have huge need to be recruiting police and fire employees for the future of our city workforce. So those are a couple of the things we're going to do. But I guess the last thing is just kind of, we have to be willing to have difficult conversations, and we're not always going to agree. Sometimes we're going to disagree fiercely. That's okay on policy, but we have to have those conversations head on.
I know you, that you said you're looking to fill vacancies. How is the search for Akron Police Chief going to play out in your first 100 days?
So we are, the City of Akron is engaging with the search firm that helped with the process for Chief Milette. And we are putting together a community engagement strategy. And then, you know, we'll go into the formal recruiting process. We hope to have more to share on the timeline very soon. But, you know, it's likely that we will have an interim chief for some time. And, you know, we'll go through a deliberate process to hire the next chief of the department. I think we don't want to rush the process, but we want people to feel Like they understand how the process is going and how they can plug into the process. And so, you know, it's going to be a very transparent and public facing process.
All right. So you have 30 seconds to answer this. The next few months before you actually start your role, what will you be doing?
A lot of work, a lot of work in preparation. But no, I'm going to try to rest a little bit as well. You know, I've been running for mayor for over a year. It's been a lot. It's been a long road. But, you know, just trying to, you know, be mindful and recognize, you know, none of us can do this alone. I got elected because of a whole team of people on our staff and beyond. And so I'm trying to recognize, you know, none of us do this alone. We're building a team of people that can really execute. The things that I've talked about just in the last few minutes are it's a big vision. It's not just something that I can do by myself. It's something we all have to be a part of. So that's the biggest thing that I'm thinking about is how do we figure out how to divide that work amongst a lot of folks.
Mayor-elect Shamus Malik, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations. And we will be touching base with you in the weeks, months to come.
Happy to be part of it anytime.
Thank you. And that is the Sound of Ideas. Tomorrow, we're going to take a deeper look into the results of Issue 2. If you miss any portion of the program, find us online or listen to the Sound of Ideas podcast. You can hear a rebroadcast tonight at 9 on 89.7 WKSU. I am Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening to us today, and we'll speak to you again tomorrow.